We are here on Manufacturing Day in Lorain County at A.J. Rose Manufacturing in Avon, right here at the Moore and Chester, the one-way Chester Road right now. Is that
yes.
where we are here? They've been here for many years and seen sort of a lot of the growth around them, and sometimes that happens when businesses come in. They are in a location. Other folks say, hey, that's working for them. Maybe I should do that. So there's economic development that comes out of that. But joining us to talk about A.J. Rose and what they do here is the president and CEO, Daniel Prisher. Dan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
How long have you been now with A.J. Rose?
34 years.
Okay. And what was your introduction to the company? What did you first do when you got here?
Well, I'll start with a UD Flyer. So shout out to the Flyers, University of Aiken graduate. Sure. I'm in an engineering degree. And from that point, I went to General Motors for a few years. And then I joined the company in 1985 as a floor engineer, manufacturing engineer.
Okay.
And then I've been pretty much in the engineering realm the whole time I've been here, up until about 12 years ago, where I was voted in CEO.
So tell me a little bit about the engineering aspect of it. What is that? What talents are you providing here for what they make here?
Well, when I first came, we were still in the Cleveland facility down on West 38th and Clark, and I was mainly a manufacturing engineer, and we were bringing in some new equipment, that new stamping presses and the existing process that we had. We were doing some conversions into a better process, and I was in charge of that for one of my first projects. And that was kind of how it went for the 4, 5, 6 years like that. And then eventually I started graduating into more management of engineers, but always circled around some product development and product output, and also putting in the equipment in the building and researching the new types of equipment that the industry is using and keeping up to date with that. And one of the biggest things, and when we started the facility out here in 95, it broke ground in 94, is I had an older brother and myself were pretty much in charge of the building project itself. And I did most of the stuff on the inside of the building, the way it's laid out, the way the presses are laid out, the way we have the underground scrap system, the die carrier, all the things that we knew from the other facility that we were in that we really had to improve on for product flow.
Talk about that underground scrap. This is fascinating. You can't see it, but tell me what it does
exactly.
And its benefit that otherwise you'd have to do.
What it does is it enables you to put stamping presses closer together so that you're not wasting floor space. Mm-hmm. And most of our machines right now, the scrap can go either through the center of the press or out the end and down. And it goes down into the floor onto another conveyor. But then there is a new conveyor or an underground conveyor that's a north-south running conveyor. And all the presses, the scrap that's coming off the tools that are running in each individual press, are then dumped into that mainline scrap conveyor underground. It goes to about the center of the building, makes a 90-degree turn, and goes straight out and back up out into our scrapyard or building over here, where semis—it's the scraps dumping into semis and being layered in semis two at a time. And it provides—I think we pick up scrap probably 2-3 times, maybe a day, depending upon how active the businesses at that time and how much production we're doing. But and what it saves you is in our other facility in Cleveland, without that, you have to put scrap into boxes at the end of the press, and then you need a tow motor to come and get the box and move it and then put another one there. And a lot of that is conducive to stopping the machine while they're pulling the scrap away. So it's it's an efficiency affecting thing too.
Seems like that could create a big traffic jam with so many people. You have the process of making the thing, and then you have people hauling the stuff away and larger equipment moving through. Safety issue maybe also can
absolutely
play a
absolutely
part of that too.
I mean, it was one of the big reasons why when we were looking to expand and choose another site to expand the company's business, we were originally looking to buy another existing building. And one of the things you can't really get with an existing building is an underground scrap system. And most of the new buildings that we were looking at were pretty much the same setup that we had in Cleveland, which is what we know we didn't want, because Cleveland is made up of so many add-ons, 10 or 12 expansions of separate buildings built or purchased in that area. So you've got walls, you've got multiple beams, and it doesn't make for good product flow. So when we did this, we designed on the other side of this wall is our 100-foot bay, and we have a crane over the top of the whole bay, and all the presses are in a row going down with that scrap system going right to the center and out. And additionally, by getting the presses closer together, we load all of our tooling with a die carrier as opposed to tow motors. The tow motors usually can cause a lot of damage. It's very difficult to load a tool with a tow motor typically in today's stamping with the size of dies that we're working with right now. So the die carrier and that scrap system are two key ingredients to the layout on this plant.
I was looking at the website and they have a whole listing of things you would do: drilling, tapping, spinning, riveting, spot welding, machining. What's broaching? Do you know what?
Broaching is when you have a bore. We make front-end accessory drive pulleys. When you open up the hood of your car, you see a belt spinning around that the engine's going and running air conditioning, crankshaft pulley, idlers, and routers. We make a lot of those pulleys that you see on your vehicle on the front end of the engine. Broaching is some of those pulleys are generally pressed on a shaft that don't need to be keyed in any way, oriented to another device. But broach pulleys are, you take a broach, it's a machine that'll hold the pulley, and it scrapes a notch in the bore. In and out, in and out, in and out. And the company's called Ohio Broach. They're on the east side of Cleveland and another Cleveland manufacturer.
Wow. So you kind of look at your customers and decide, they tell you what they need, right? And you kind of
yes.
work around it?
Or we're pretty much a make-to-order. What we do at AJ Rowe is we sell a process. We're not marketing parts. We're not boxing and making parts and selling them to auto parts stores and so forth. Our customers are the ones that will take our parts and sell them to auto parts stores. But traditionally, a customer will give us a drawing, and we'll look at it, and we'll start quoting it. And we'll see some things on that drawing that we can find better ways. If we can move this feature on your part and it won't affect your assembly or change these dimensions a little bit, it'll make it easier for us to manufacture, and it'll be more cost-effective for the customer. So if we can, and where we really thrive is when customers can't change those dimensions, they need that kind of tolerance. We tend to have kind of a niche where we're able to do certain types of products, and mainly round products, and be able to hold tolerances that some other people can't due to our processes and their experience in it that we've been doing. Like front end accessory drive pulleys, for example, we've been doing them for like 40 years now.
Dan, you mentioned one of the things you were in charge of initially was keeping an eye on changes in the industry and how things may be moving about and going about differently. How much has changed? I mean, in 30 years of working on this stuff?
A lot. Automation is probably the biggest change. In stamping itself, the machine, the press that we stamp with, the newest thing introduced in the stamping business has been servo-controlled presses. And servo-controlled presses mean at a standard punch press, you have a ram that comes down and just goes up and down, and you have a die inside, and you're stamping out parts, like washers or things like that. And the change in a servo press now is that control, that slide that's going up and down, the ram. You can stop it. You can start it. You can slow it down. You can reverse it. You can tap down. It's totally reversible, totally programmable up and down. It's not mechanically timed anymore with a crankshaft running through a belt system and so forth with a motor on it. It's a servo motor as opposed to a standard motor. And you'll see we have a couple of them out in the plant. If you guys want to take the tour at 10 o'clock, I think the tours start. You should do so. Hopefully you can get off work for a little bit of a tour out there.
I did get a little preview tour a couple of weeks, and I'm listening behind me. I feel like it's like the heartbeat. You hear this noise. And I
yes.
suppose when you come in the morning and you want to be hearing that.
Definitely.
Right? I mean,
yes.
This is a thing.
Yes, I can even hear even up on the second floor up here, I can hear certain presses, certain products we make, you can hear that clank back, you can feel it.
Yeah, and it's something that's there, and it's what you want to hear because you know that that's working, everything's going on.
Absolutely.
How much maintenance has to be done? There must be a point where, you have to get into the machines or you're maybe bringing something in new. How do you work that into your system?
Yeah, maintenance is all set up on the computer for us. The manufacturer of the equipment we'll buy will give us usually a maintenance schedule, and it'll say, 3 months do this, it's 6 months, similar to a car, same kind of philosophy. And we'll program that into our maintenance system in our computer, and I think at that point, when the dates come up that those services need to be done on those machines, I think it prints out a sheet of paper and it goes right to our maintenance head, and off they go into doing that maintenance on that machine. And it's obviously coordinated with production, but as long as as far as like a like an annual like you do on an airplane, it takes weeks. We typically don't have that kind of thing with a press. If we have a press down for more than a day or two, it's a big problem. And presses today are really manufactured so that you're not going to get yourself into those kind of troubles. They have sensors on them. They'll show you if oil is getting too hot, temperature sensors, things like that. If you have some kind of a problem, there's usually something that's going to be telling you about that in addition to your preventative maintenance.
It seems like there has to be quite a bit of communication between all the departments, engineering, guys on the line, mechanics, for everything that goes on.
Absolutely. I mean, we're close-knit. I mean, we got 200,000 square feet here, but, we have a whole engineering pull over here. The maintenance group is right on the other side of the wall here. There's communication meetings in the morning, every morning, and what's due, what's going out, handing out those sheets for the preventative maintenance. We got a close-knit group here. A lot of guys, we have a lot of experience here, too, at the company. Our average age is 50. There's a couple problems. There's good things about that. We've got a lot of experience, and there's bad things about that. And I'm on the top end of that scale, too, so that's not even good from my standpoint. But, yeah, I mean, that kind of leads right into, you know, one of our biggest problems going ahead. I mean, we get together and do our we have a board meeting every quarter, and we'll sit down with discuss strategy, look at 3- and 5-year plan, and say, you know, what's really impeding our success going forward? We're approaching our 98th year. So we got our 100-year celebration coming up in a couple years, and we're looking to go to the next 100 years in it. So labor is definitely going to be one of the things. Skilled trades, I think probably Molly was talking about it before me here. That is critical. We are ready to do what we need to do with the educators in the community to get into that. Get people apprenticing out here for us, get people in here, even some are helping for us, showing them that manufacturing is definitely a career path for them. We have tool and die trade. If you get in the tool and die trade, everybody that pretty much designs and develops the tools that we have that run on the floor that make all these parts for Ford, GM, Chrysler, Toyota, Honda, all these companies, they came from the floor. They came from the tool and die trade. They were successful in it. They 10, 15 years at it. Now we call them, now they're in tool engineering is what we call it. We taught them how to design the tools. They already worked on them all. They know what they all look like. Designing the tool, once you know the function of it and have worked on them out on the floor and so forth, is easy. It's just a matter of getting computer savvy with CAD and so forth. Sure. And those are the key to the engineering group here right now, is that the people that are designing and developing those tools on the floor are a big piece of the puzzle. And in order to get those people, we need those die makers to continue to start at an early age, learn the trade, get the apprenticeships done, and then we can promote them here. And a tool engineer here can make as much as a college degree engineer. That's how critical those people are to our business.
They're like creators. They're so creative back there. I went to that area. Where are they? And they're the ones that are sort of coming up with prototypes or trying to figure out how to make something so that when it gets put on the line, it comes out the way the customer wanted.
Absolutely. I mean, that there's a lot of people behind them. There's the person who's building the die. There's the group that's maintaining the die. There's the people maintaining the press that we talked about. I mean, there's an army of people that need to support that. But when something's not running, there's a line of defense that starts with the die maker on the floor. If he's struggling with it, then he goes to the tool engineer. And between the two of them, if it gets to the supervisor, the general manager, then we know we really got to be on it, because if it got that far, if it gets to the first two lines of defense, it's pretty serious.
What do you think it is that made this company last 98 years into 100 years? What is it, either about sort of the tradition of the company or just something that was laid down back in 1922 that kind of continues to resonate today?
What we learned from our parents, and we've probably got, I don't know, 10 to 12 family members here working right now in all aspects in the business right now. And really, it really boils down to disrespect. We all respected each other's ideas. We definitely will argue. We will argue on and off. But generally speaking, at the end of the day, when we're posed with some type of decision that needs to be made, we'll have a discussion, and if there's some disagreement, usually we all sway and the oars are going in the same direction at the end of the day. And respect, and you know, we do things outside the business too. I mean, we're not just family and work partners, but you know, we socialize together too, and I think that's a big part of it. To be able to have that away from the company, socializing and still maintain that work ethic. So respect and worth ethic are key. And that's what we were taught by our parents and our grandparents.
Well, you have all these machines, but really you come down to the people. I mean, in the business,
absolutely,
it's the people, and the machines will just sit here quietly if the people aren't here.
Yes.
And you really need to have a good work group. How many people are employed by the company?
We have about 330 total employees between the two facilities in the Cleveland and Avon. And we're probably around, I'd say, maybe 190 to 200 here, and probably 100 to 130 in Cleveland, somewhere in that mix. Cleveland's about half the size of this facility.
All right. We're kind of at the front end. We look out, we see off of Chester Road here. You got the pond in the front, the business as well here. Don't see much about, you know, where's all the metal and the trucks and all of that kind of sound coming through.
I'll go back to 95. We chose this location, and there's many reasons why we chose this location, but one of the things we ran into is we had to change the zoning. It was all this property out here in 95 was all vineyards, farmland. It still is farmland. You can still see some of the vineyards, but it's gradually been building up. But so we had a lot of neighbors, and they're like, stamping plant. Oh, we're going to have noise pollution. We're going to have smokestacks, you know, because we had to change it to industrial. And our county representatives and our city representatives were instrumental, along with our architects and so forth, and going to, we had to have town hall meetings and say, hey, no, we're not going to build something with smokestacks, and we're not going to build, you know, noise. It's going to be totally enclosed. And we pushed it through, and it was we got a yes vote on it, got the zoning change, and the rest is history, as they say here. But I defy you, if you guys have driven by this plant in the past, I mean, most people don't even know AGROs exist here, let alone if they know and they read the sign, if the grass is mowed down enough that they can see the sign, they think, is this, what do you guys do here?
Is this office
what is
business?
This? Yeah,
is
what
it
is
it? Business place?
Yeah, executives? Is this a warehouse, or, you know, what's going on here? And that's what we like about it. I mean, we don't have any customers local here. I mean, our customers come in from Detroit. They come in from all around the country and all around the world, frankly, to visit us. We don't need any signage on the outside of the building here. So, you know, we're trying to be a good neighbor and build a quality building, something that's aesthetically pleasing to the eye. We don't want to throw any commercial, you know, we don't need a commercial here. You know, the noise of a stamping plant, you don't hear it. I mean, we're enclosed and we're air conditioned. We're 100% air conditioned. You've ever been to a manufacturing plant and stamping, it's 100% air conditioned?
I'm sure the employees appreciate it.
Usually the windows are, there's windows.
Definitely adds to efficiency gains. Yes.
So it's all part of that. And that's really sort of the new manufacturing and what manufacturing day and month is all about, looking at these careers, what they're all about. You know, it's like the employees leave here. It's not like sometimes you think manufacturing, they bring all the metal particles home and all that kind of things like that. It really isn't much like that anymore, the way things are. And so sort of shows what it's all about. Daniel, we appreciate your time sharing it with
us. Absolutely, guys.
Being a great host for us. Again, Manufacturing Month, they're getting set up for the